You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor.
Losers.
21 South Africans. 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
£1 million.
Hello everyone and welcome to RJP's coverage of Survivor South Africa Champions. I'm your host Shannon Gust, here to talk about episodes 8 and 9. We are at the halfway point. We are rounding out the pre-merge. We have a lot to talk about. So to do that, I'm going to welcome in my co-host. Please welcome the Derek Alberts to my Carol Shabalala, the great Mike Blue. Mike, how are you?
I'm so great, Shannon. Oh, wait, my nose is bleeding. I'm not really sure how. It's never going to be explained, but... Yeah, I think this the comparison makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You excel much more than I do. Yeah. I linger in the background in a wicker ball. Damn it, Graham, why couldn't you help me? And I'm bleeding from an orifice, apparently. So I think it all makes sense.
Yeah, look, I was excited when I saw the sports presenters because I was like, okay, if they can bring presenters on, maybe the next step is Survivor presenters. Maybe this is how we get out on the island.
I was going to say, like, this is essentially the equivalent of if Survivor South Africa Season 8 had you and I come on and do a challenge.
Okay, spoiler alert for what we're about to do, Mike. Somehow we got out there in COVID, quarantined, and did that. But I will say that watching it, like I said to Peter, like, I could imagine me and Mike doing this if Derek and Carol will. And Derek, then when his nose was bleeding, I was like, you know what? I do feel like that could be Mike. I get it. I see it.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I've only run one Survivor challenge so far, which I unfortunately lost. So I could very much imagine I got pretty banged up there as well. So I definitely was sporting some wounds a la Derek. It is interesting because we talked about how the use of sports stars in the previous challenges tried to play at least a little bit into their skill set. And I guess this was the case here. Right? Because these are not outright athletes, but they do have a talent for using their voice effectively. So having them be the callers for the Russell Swan Memorials Challenge was, I think, a very fun use of it. And let me throw out a spoiler right here, Shannon. This is officially the end of the special guest twist on Survivor South Africa.
Okay, I was not ready for that. I don't know how they can just stop it. It's kind of how they just started doing mid-challenge confessionals and now they're like a constant in the season, but it only started partway through the season. Like, if you're gonna do something, I feel like carry it to its like full completion.
I think it's mainly because they wanted to put it in the pre-merge because of the aspect of, okay, you can win this sports star for your side. I don't know if they did away with it afterwards, realizing, okay, maybe this isn't exactly a thing. Maybe once because the tribal aspect is dropping, they felt like that was a concept that should sort of go out the window. Of course, it ended up going out the window at the end because that final one, each tribe got their own, you know, quote unquote, athlete, and it was determined by random draw. It's felt like a long time since we've seen like that captain's duel. You know, it's been a couple weeks ago that we actually saw it, and that felt so different at the same time. So, it sort of speaks for the pre-merge in that there's an odd sort of mishmash of things production-wise that are all going to abruptly come to a stop once the merge hits.
Okay, well, I'm intrigued by that. Honestly, I obviously didn't like. I thought I didn't like the whole bringing in sports stars thing, but I'm kind of sad to see it go. And they finally brought in a woman, which was cool. And she's the only guest who will ever win a challenge on the show, which is amazing. Maybe someone should tell production that female athletes exist. They could have brought in some female sports stars, but they brought a woman in the form of a presenter. And I love that their superpower was calling, because I don't know if you're better at calling because you use your voice as your job, but I love that they kind of
drew that. Yeah, I guess you're therefore have the ability to be able to give directions, I suppose. I'm trying to figure out what would probably be the best job to do that. Maybe like a kindergarten teacher or something, giving directions loudly, clearly, and simply. More so with your voice, especially. Yeah. I mean, I guess their voices carry, which I guess allowed them. And also, I think helps that Carol was a woman, because it was mostly guys both operating those balls and in those balls, right? And so I think her voice was a lot more distinct than someone like Derek. So when you hear something like, ow, my face, you think it might be Xavion and not poor Derek.
Poor Derek, with his nosebleed that he could do nothing about, then he loses the challenge, but then the winner doesn't even get to go on the reward. I mean, I know that we questioned it before, like, would the sports stars, if they ever won something, actually get to share in something like a reward? And we found out that they would not. Like, Carol deserved to be at that pool party. Like, she was robbed of that.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think she deserves that entire crate of beer. I think she deserves the day. Yes, look, these people have been banged up and might deserve the pool party a bit more, at least to rest their weary bones. But I think that Carol put in a hard day's work as an official Survivor contestant. If John T. Rhodes was allowed to enjoy the spoils that he brought on his overnight visit, why couldn't Carol have? Though I guess from her position, as Mark Fish would say, it's a moral victory.
Yeah, I think he's misusing that. And also, I don't know what a moral victory really is, especially on Survivor. But I think, like, look, we didn't really follow through with, like, power ranking these guests. But I'm putting Carol at the top. She's the only winner.
Yeah.
She's basically my counterpart, someone who could come on and be a presenter who could come on Survivor. I like that she's setting that precedent. So yeah, Carol for the win.
Yeah, I absolutely think she's number one, even by default. I think, unfortunately, Derek might be near the bottom, just because even if I'm looking at personalities from the losers, I think Jimmy Tao was a good personality. Jonty had that haircut that just won't quit. And Micaiah, you know, had a big personality to his name. So unfortunately, I think Derek might be the omega to her alpha.
You hated that haircut.
It stuck with me, Shannon.
I can see
stuck
that.
With me. I'm like Steven. I can't stop obsessing over things. Evidently, my version of Sunette possibly having the idol is Jonty Rhodes' haircut.
Yeah, you just like trim those sideburns, which is, I'm sure, a joke you made at the time. But it's just where our minds will go with the haircut that you're obsessed with. But anyway, we've spoken a long time now about the sports stars. This is how they get you. We're on a Survivor podcast. Spend 5 minutes talking about sports stars to begin with. It. We don't even not even talking Survivor anymore. Like they've won.
Here's the thing. I'll admit, from my perspective, at least, I kind of think the pre-merge ended with a bit of a thud. And not to say that I wasn't entertained modestly by these episodes. I just think in comparison to what we had up to this point, especially last week when we had that very singular, very dramatic, very eventful swap episode, I don't think it helped that we saw the same tribe go to tribal council back to back. I don't think it helped that even a blindside vote like Steven, the way the story was being told, we were very much led to that water and drank it up. It's not to say that I miss this all the time, but part of me was kind of hoping in the Steven booth that maybe we'd get a reversion back to the, okay, is it going to be David or is it going to be Steven type of thing, to really see in which direction Marion and Shane and Sibu would go into. Certainly didn't help that the only Celoton stuff we saw in 2 hours was, okay, they're hungry. Sully is bragging about how he helps everybody, but he's going home as soon as Celoton goes to tribal council. They're thinking about the merge. It felt like the show was a bit tied because one tribe ended up going to tribal council only after the swap. And there were certainly moments that were interesting, but I don't know. For me, these last two episodes felt like they dragged a bit more than I think the previous seven.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't so exciting. I think I enjoyed the Steven boot because obviously it was a blindside, and I thought there was a lot of like strategic merit to both what Shane and Marion were talking about in their respective plans, which is, I'm sure, something we can discuss. So I think, like, you know, being able to pause the show and be like, all right, like, let's do a pro-con list on, you know, this is what it's like watching Survivor with me for all the people who want to send prayers to my husband, but like being able to pause it and say, okay, both of these plans have merit. Like, which one would you go with? What is a better plan? I kind of like the meat that there is there, not like all the meat that Utara were eating in the last episode. So I did enjoy it. I think the fact that David miraculously survived was pretty fun. But yeah, I would say that it wasn't two of the most exciting episodes, but it's been a pretty solid pre-merge, I would say. Like, there's obviously the weird stuff that we have fun with. It does drag a bit. It's a little too slow. Some of the production decisions are questionable, as we've discussed. I think there's been a few fun votes in there. Probably that best episode that we talked about. You said you love episode two. I agree. That would be top two for me. And then, like, the double tribal where Shona and Zan went would probably be the best one for me of the pre-merge. So some intrigue there, probably too much length, much like this monologue that I'm currently on. I thought it was a pretty solid pre-merge. I'm excited to see where the merge goes because I hear it gets even better.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that no matter how you feel about it, we are through what some people consider the lesser half of the season, which is exciting because I think we are facing down some very interesting prospects, right? We only have four new Taras coming in, but there's this whole idea of, okay, could David flip back to the Celotons? Could David bring in some more people to the new Tara side? Or could they be able to join this sort of super coalition against the whole Vel, Boothle, and Sully side as well, especially someone like Sully, who next to Xavion is looking like a pretty big physical threat as well, which pops up a lot in the merge. And also the fact that the Minority Alliance right now has two idols, which could both pop up as soon as this merge tribal council. So a lot of stuff is gearing up to make for a very didactic, you know, cataclysmic post-merge. I think we just had to sort of suffer through things like the Sinnet vote, which, for instance, which is interesting considering how much Sinnet really was able to claw her way into the Majority Alliance. It was just through a number of circumstances that she ends up going out the way that she did, even though she could have possibly made some fireworks happen with that idol play.
Yeah, I mean, that's what made it a bit interesting. It was just like a pure Sinnet boot, and it was kind of a quit, and we'll talk about that, because she did have the capacity to do something, but she chose not to, actively chose not to. So I think there's more intrigue there than there should have been, even though I do think the Sinnet vote was a bit of a snoozer. But yeah, I mean, I see the merge setting up as like these three basic voting blocks. You know, you have like old Celotron, you have the fractured old Utara, obviously what was the Majority Alliance, which now has David, and then you have what was the Minority Alliance, and Sivu's kind of between the two. We'll talk about how he said that that both sides think that he voted with them on the Killarney vote, which is crazy. I mean, they did read out 5-3-1 instead of 6-3-1. Anyone should know that means it is 6-3-1, but I'm not sure these players would. So if he's been maintaining that this whole time, that's incredible to me. So he's kind of between them. And yeah, we'll talk about the dynamics as they come in the merge. Obviously, I'm completely unspoiled and I don't know what happens. So I do think that I'm going to make some predictions probably of where I think it'll go. But the fact that it could go, you know, kind of any way with these voting blocks, I think it's set up quite interestingly.
Yeah, and not to mention the fact that even with Celotron, you had this core four in Graham, Altoff, and Moira, who now lost Jenna. Are they bringing Xavion into that? Could Xavion play an interesting role? You know, considering that, well, it's interesting. You could say maybe on paper that he has an opportunity to get revenge against those who did him wrong at the very beginning. But it does seem like, at least from what he was talking about in these two episodes, about how, you know, Utara's strategy is really makes alliances based on strategy. Ours is based on trust and friendship, that you can imagine he's probably going to be Celotron strong until the very end.
That's the Tony line, right? An alliance of numbers and an alliance of comfort. That was a bad Tony impression. I'm so sorry. I think that there's a lot of interesting things here because there's a lot of really big threats. Like, we can talk about someone like Sully, for example. We've talked about him being the Rupert, and I do think he's going to be in the Majority next week. I think, like, he and his allies will be the Kingmakers, probably with Sivu. Which side are they going to go with? But I think, like, even if he's in power for a couple of votes, like, I would expect, kind of like in Pearl Islands with Rupert, that in a couple of votes, they're just all ganging up on Sully because his relationships aren't that good. And also he is a big threat. So I don't see this being down the line, maybe because I've heard it's a good merge, but also because I think there's enough kind of fluidity, which Utara really put a lot of work in this week to just kind of make it that fluid thing and not so down the line so that it wouldn't be so cut and dry for them and for us, I guess, as viewers. And I think that there will be kind of like some moving and shaking around the merge.
Not to mention the fact that idols, I think, are finally ready to be played in this game. We got so close last week, Shannon, and this week to idols actually having an effect on everything, but they have certainly loomed large but not actually come into play. I can imagine, especially with Shane and Marion having them in possession going into an individual game, those things are going to fly, and then, you know, when they get expended, the other ones will be hidden, and you can imagine that it's going to keep on cycling through as well.
Yeah, I mean, so in this discussion of, like, merge dynamics, fluidity, all those things, I think comes down to this key decision, that I do want to talk to you about and get your take on it, because it's like, was Steven or David? And I think that both, as I've said, both points by Marion and Shane made sense. And if anything, they made a lot of sense individually for each one. I think Shane's plan was better for him. I think Marion's plan was better for her. I probably lean more Marion, and I think it's great that they went with it. But where did you fall on the whole Steven versus David debate?
Yeah, I mean, maybe I was a sucker for the edit. I was really getting tired of Steven by the end of this. Like, it's not just that he's a robot, Shannon. He's a moralistic robot. He's a robot that thinks he's better than all the squishy meatbag humans.
Robots are better than humans, I'm sure.
Well, on a certain aspect, but can they live? Can they love? Can they feel?
Probably.
Not yet, at least.
So
we have that above them, at least. But they certainly built up, especially in these two episodes. They really have been planting the seeds, I think, since all the way back during the Double Tribal Council episode when he needlessly tried to flush Bootle's idol, that Steven, you know, maybe has some people problems. And I actually do really buy Marion's argument that, well, look, if our plan was to get all the Utaras back together, guess who's not going to be a welcoming face for Bootle, Vel, and Sully? That would be Steven, who personally tried to flush Bootle's idol in the Zan vote last time we all voted together. I really like that point. I can imagine that they certainly will not forgive nor forget that. And so, and I do think that decision probably looms larger than just, you know, disposing of someone who has very admittedly and openly voted with you the past two votes. Really does seem true to his word in that moment to your face, and seems like he would indeed want to flip on his tribe. It really seems like you would be expending a number in lieu of expending of someone who could, whose disposal could bring multiple numbers back into the fold of, oh, you finally saw the line and got rid of that ass Steven. Great. Now I'm going to vote with you.
Yeah. It was fun to track, as we have been every week, that like, all right, like he's trying to flush Bookley's idol. It feels unnecessarily cruel to like try and make Val vote for Bookley, or like, you know, to make her part of this plan unwillingly. You know, that's a bad social move, as much as it's like, again, the robotic strategic move. And then we spoke about it more last week. And then like this week, Shane literally verbalized that he goes way too much with the plan and doesn't think about social graces. And I was like, we just said that 7 years in the future. So thank you, Shane, for that. So I did think that it was totally fair for that to come back to bite him in a way that made strategic sense. It's kind of nice. I wasn't so anti-Steven, but it is nice to see like, when people get punished for their mistakes, maybe, like when you're like, this is bad gameplay, and then it literally comes around that that is their undoing, you're like, all right, cool. So game theory works in Survivor. So I think that Marion's plan made a lot of sense for her, especially, and really especially for Sivu as well, who's obviously going to try connect to those other Uchara members. They could try and broker something here, you know, and it could give them a lot more power in the merge to have a majority than a one-time shield, especially for Marion, who has Shane as a shield already. And especially in modern Survivor, where the person who's meant to be a shield isn't as much of a shield as you think, because people might think they have an idol and then they do vote for someone like Marion anyway. So I think great plan for her. Steven's also like correctly not trusting Marion as much. So I think that, you know, there was like that relationship was kind of coming to an end. For Shane, I feel like I got where he was going, wanting to take out David because he does need a shield, a warning shot against him. Like, if they say, if it really does work out that they do use Steven as a shield, and again, like, Shane and Steven are probably equally threatening, give or take, so who knows? But, like, if it works out, then he gets a warning shot against Steven, then he has two idols he can work with. So that is a lot of intel and a lot of power. He also explains that he also isn't loved by the rest of Utara. He's probably the second most disliked, so he might have problems integrating as well that I don't think Marion will have as much. So I see him needing the shield. I see Marion needing the kind of space for relationships and connection. I like that Shane went with his ally. I think that's a good way to go. I think that's a good way to kind of, you know, if you're going to be a leader or kind of leading or a big personality and kind of this alpha personality, yes, it's good to let your allies have one and have a plan that is still good for you and good for the tribe. So I like the way they both went about it, and I thought both of their points were pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I can see where Shane was coming from. However, there was a part, I believe, in episode 9 where he actually, I think, from what I interpreted, it was actually advising keeping David, basically saying, okay, David's going to be seen as a traitor, so he's essentially going to be like a free shot that the Celotons could possibly take on him, which will keep us around for another round longer, which I think is a good point. Because I do think if they keep Steven around, I think the Celotons get rid of Shane before they get rid of Steven. I don't think Steven's going to be that much of a shield, because you hear what they say. Like, they very much see that Shane is an alpha. Shane is schemy. Shane is one of the leaders. I don't think Steven is necessary. Unless Steven goes ahead and wins a couple of challenges and becomes more of the immediate threat, I don't see his value as a shield. But I think most paramount is not even all this stuff looking ahead. Honestly, I think Steven dug his own grave with all of the comments he was making. Because if you're in an alliance and your ally does things like go to tribal council and say, yeah, this thing that they did, I didn't like it. It was dirty. Or, you know, approach someone and be like, well, I'm sorry we have to vote off Sunette, but it wasn't my thought to bring them into the alliance. It was your fault. I think it really puts a bad seed in your allies' heads of, okay, does he even want to be in alliance with me at a certain point? It seems like he actually might show a predilection to maybe go against your wishes or do something else, considering how open and vocal he is to, as much as he votes on the paper to be a team player alongside Shane and Marion, it seems like he is very, very, very vocal as of late about how much he disagrees with the things they've been doing.
Yeah, I definitely feel like the Steven robot had like the morality drive only recently booted and was like trying to work through morality with this very skewed perception, because it was this like rigid, very strange sense of what morality on Survivor should be. I mean, we see it a lot. You see like the, you know, the Savage characters, for example, Lee or Sam Webb, you know, of what morality should be. But like, firstly, this has been talked about to death, but it's not something you need in just playing Survivor. Like, obviously, don't be a horrible person, don't bully, but like in actually playing the game, yes, you can backstab and betray, like that's fine, and you don't need to like justify it to yourself or others. So that's the first one. The second one is that he was as culpable, and maybe more than most, in the idol stealing, which was like one of the main sticking points. Like, you only need two people for that. You need the sealer, which was like kind of everyone, but mostly Shane, and you need the distractor, which was all Steven. So he's like the second most instrumental person in that plan. And the other thing is, like, he seemed to not want the audience to think badly of him, which again, like, audience saw him take Jenna away. It's again that like kind of skewed perception of what the audience will think. But also, if that's how you feel, don't tell it to Marion.
Don't tell everybody. Don't tell everybody at Tribal Council. That's the problem. He said the quiet part loud and the loud part quiet. Him essentially announcing to everybody, hey, I don't feel good about this. I mean, Marion is understandably pissed, basically saying you're a freeloader in our alliance. You are doing dirty stuff that is in line with us, and then are saying, no, 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 I would dare not participate in that. And that ruffles my feathers.
I don't think you should be saying that to anyone. Like, he's blaming Marion for the Sunette thing. He's saying in tribal council that, like, he's not part of the idol stealing. When, like, just say that in confessional if you're worried about how the audience will view you. I think they'll see you as hypocritical, but, like, if that's the way you want to take it. But don't go out and, like, blame Marion and just like wipe your hands of it. And like, it's not something that he's just projecting. Like, he clearly believes it. He feels worse about Marion and Shane for stealing the idol, when again, he was a very big part, probably a bigger part of stealing the idol than Marion and actually how it was executed. So yeah, I do think that there is some strange stuff happening with the robot wiring and his perception of morality. And I think that that also went a long way to just like making people not want to play with him. And that's a big part of, like, again, like, going into a merge with allies. It's like, do you want to play with David, who's been nothing but loyal and who isn't saying anything to bug you? Or do you want to play with the person who you have been with from the beginning, but who's being kind of sketchy? And, like, if this is how you view the game and morality, like, I'm concerned about what you're going to do next, because it's chaotic.
I do also wonder, there was a certain point where Steven, you know, apologizes to Sunette, saying, oh, it's out of my hands. I was overruled by these dirty, dirty players. And I thought I caught a snatch of him saying that he might just write down a random name, which I wonder, big braining at Shannon, could Steven have been the reason that Sunette doesn't bring and play the idol at Tribal Council? Because she thinks if Steven writes down a random name and she writes down someone, then it would be a 1-1 tie. And then the person that she wants might not be gone. So her whole plan might be shot to sunshine, and she misses her shot because Steven decides to have a heart and write down a random name.
I think that the reason that Sunette doesn't play it is like some combination of some things that just all make me sad. Like, if it's her own lack of confidence and just her personality type, if it's just kind of like the indoctrination of the season that it's all about the team, then Mark saying it's a team game when it isn't. If it's just kind of kind of giving up and thinking that she can't win. Like, there's a lot of reasons there. And I do think maybe it works in because, yes, she should still play the idol. Like, she'll still be safe and someone will go. It might not be Steven. But if she really is thinking, like, someone is more deserving, she's probably not thinking maybe Steven is and he's, like, berated her multiple times just in this episode alone. But maybe she's thinking, okay, he'll write down a random name and then anyone could go home. And what if it is, like, a Marion or a Sivu or someone who really doesn't deserve it in her mind? And she'd rather go home before that person, before she actually goes home, before Steven.
Yeah, so you brought this up before. Let's talk about it. I do not mean to quit shame again. I think we've spoken about this before, that I think to cast an umbrella pall around the idea of quitting is really obtuse to do. But technically speaking, did Sunette quit the game here? Because there was an opportunity, there was an option right in front of her for her to play an idol and stay another day. That granted might have given her like a respite of 2 days in this game, but instead she decisively, intentionally decides not to take that path.
Well, it's not even 2 days in the game because you're at the final 12. You might merge. You might win a challenge.
That's true.
And they were close to doing so. And then she's actually made the merge. So it is kind of a quit. Like, you can say, like, oh, but she's drawing dead. What's the point of going on? There's no prizes for, like, you know, the same way in US Survivor, how you get more and more money as you go. But I'm pretty sure that's how it worked at this time. But, like, anyone can win. Tom won. Tom was drawing dead, in quotation marks, at this stage of the game, and then he won.
To be fair, that was in the future. So unless you're Shane and you can predict what people are going to be doing in the future on podcasts and on Survivor proper, she might not actually think that a goat could win these things.
Fine, but it's not about what would happen. It's the fact that it has the capacity to happen. And again, to talk about more future things, like Letitia, for example, someone in a similar position, a similar demographic, who we might have said was drawing dead in the pre-merge, if she sat next to the right people, even in a final three, she could have won. Like, I think before the merge, no one's really drawing dead. You don't know how it's going to go. You don't know if someone's going to be really bad at Final Tribal Council. Like, you could get to the merge. And then if you're Sunette, you probably are pretty much making it to the end. And maybe you pull off one epic move and it's enough to win. So the fact that she gave that up when she had the idol in her hands, and I definitely want to talk about how terrible it was that someone let that happen. I do kind of see it as a quit, but it's an interesting quit from a psychological perspective, because I think it does really feed into all of these values that the season has pushed at people to make someone feel that they're so undeserving that they shouldn't even be there. That's fascinating to me, even though, yes, she did lay down her sword, I think.
Yeah, I really did not like the look from Shane in these couple episodes, particularly that sort of standoffishness he had in episode 8, in Sunette's boot episode, specifically that comment of, well, Sunette is so, you know, bad in these challenges, she should be happy that she should be the one volunteering to quit. Yes, again, as we spoke about with Steven, from a certain perspective, like you said, if you're believing in, okay, weed out the weak and keep the strong into better than getting to the merge, then maybe that's the thing to do. But I think it's a little far to be like, Sunette should make a big speech, General Patton style, in front of the flag of South Africa and say, all right, I know you can go on without me. I'm the weak link here. Leave me behind. Leave me in the dust. And Utara, you move on. I don't need a million rand. You keep on that fight. You know, I bleed Utara strong. I'll gladly sacrifice myself.
Yeah. I mean, especially because it's right before the merge. I mean, these votes were crucial. If they had won immunity, these two votes, they would have gone in with, like, a new Tara majority, which would have been amazing. And now they're possibly outnumbered 7-4, which is a difficult one. But at the end of the day, it is an individual game. And I wonder how much of that mentality of the champions, of teams, of having Mark, who keeps calling it a team game, has kind of seeped into everyone's consciousness, whether that is Sunette, who really believes that the team is more important than herself in a game where one person wins 1 million rand and everyone else gets nothing. I wonder how much that seeped into for Shane, who really does seem to believe that, like, yeah, Sunette should put herself on the bench for the team, except the bench is being out of Survivor and you get nothing for being on the bench when you're out of Survivor. So I didn't like the look either from Shane in these episodes. I put a lot of the blame onto him for telling someone that she's going to go home when you've left the idol in the sweet potatoes, when she can take camp items hostage, because that is a game move now that we think, you know, would really work. And you can say, okay, well, he's read Sunette well enough that she's not the kind of player to do that, but she held that idol. Like, she thought about it.
She was very, very close to doing so. Now, let's talk about that alternate universe, Earth 38, where she does do that. Do you think her taking aim at Steven would have been the right thing to do? Much like we talked about last week, how we thought that if Jenna had indeed kept that idol in play, that getting rid of Marion would have been a good way to fracture the alliance. From Sinet's perspective, which I guess is to just last another day and possibly eke through one more vote, would this move at Steven, which seemed to be at the moment just out of pure pettiness and spite, would that have been the move to do?
I mean, the fact that they next go to Steven makes me think not, because he, like, is someone who clearly, like, wouldn't really fracture it and that they take him out themselves. But I think the thing is that she's really tight with Marion. And as much as Sinet is holding the idol, I think, like, Marion is holding the strings. And she's the one kind of putting the plans in certain heads and laughing evilly about it. So I think that if you don't want to upset Marion, then yes, you vote out Steven and hope that just kind of like you can get in with that group. And you haven't really upset that many people. If you merge, you're okay. If you win immunity, you're okay. And just kind of actually go with that group long term. So I think that that would have been good. If you really want to cause chaos, vote out the person who is sitting you down and telling you to your face that you're going home and underestimating you to the point where they're doing it next to an idol that you can take at any time. You vote out Shane. But that would really pretty much sever all your relationships, and you'd have to hope to make it to emerge and just jump to Felaton. So she has some options of which way to go. I don't think she was thinking anyone else but Steven. But again, I think that's because it was mostly Marion's move.
Imagine if she blindsided Shane, not only because he's the de facto leader of the tribe, not only because they have that group meeting where they gather everyone around and Shane really half-assedly deadpans. You see how upset everyone is, clearly, that you're the one going right now. But the fact that she would, without her knowing, blindside someone and vote him out with an idol in his pocket, that would have been truly amazing.
Yeah,
absolutely chaotic. And granted, it would probably be a near guarantee that Utara goes back to Tribal Council again. I mean, again, the challenge that they end up losing right before the merge was not necessarily physically based, but Sinet was literally on one last leg that I can imagine the morale might be brought down to a certain respect, especially fracturing with their leader gone. But man, that would have been incredible. That's the thing as well, is I do wonder how much the physical fatigue coupled into the mental fatigue coupled into the emotional fatigue that led Sinet to do what she did. Because I feel like the Sinet of the first couple weeks would have totally been fine with doing that, with playing that idol and getting rid of someone like Shane. But I feel like maybe it was Zan quitting. Maybe it was this whole kerfuffle with Bootlay and making her realize that, you know, her game is more so out there. But I feel like the Sinet who really felt on the ropes and would do whatever to get ahead in the first couple days might have wanted to do something like this had she gotten her hands on the idol earlier.
Well, that's why I'm saying it's like a psychologically interesting quit, because yeah, it does speak to how, like, the game can deflate you, and it does speak to how, like, this tribe mentality or even just being on the outs can deflate you. So I think there's some interesting things there. Like, yes, she did walk out of the game, but you can talk about how kind of, like, the mental pressure that the other tribe members are putting on her so that she doesn't make that move, and how that is a move in and of itself, like, really just, like, carrying that party line of the tribe. And how important it is and how much you deserve to be there on a player where that can be impactful, especially at the stage of the game. Like, that's a move. The same way that Tony, you know, talks to Wu about deserving. You could say that Wu quit, basically, you know, that he gave up $900,000. Was he basically giving up the game? Like, not in his mind, because there were some other psychological elements to it. It is a bit different. Obviously, he's staying in the game, but I do think that there's some strategic intrigue there based on what the other players are doing, based on what she is doing, but yeah, I mean, they let her hold the idol in her hands, and Sinet is way too chaotic just generally for that to have been a good move, because there is another world where she uses it probably on Steven, probably definitely not on Shane, and then there's another world where, like, were they never checking the sweet potatoes? Like, surely, yep, if she's actually taking the idol, someone is checking the sweet potatoes and then is saying, hey, Sinet must have the idol, and then David is going home and finally suffering for being second last for what will be 4 or 5 times in a row.
I love this idea also that they put it in the sweet potatoes. Like, the sweet potatoes are the equivalent of Cornet on Utara. Yeah, this is the random constant that we are giving the idol to. And luckily, sweet potatoes don't make decisions and give the idol away. But you're totally right that, again, early game Sinet, that would be like putting a lit match in the general vicinity of a dynamite fuse, where there's a very good chance the offset of everything might blow up in your face. But I guess at that point, they just felt so trusting. I mean, I think it certainly did help their mentality that this was, we talked about this last week, it happened to work out that the alliance of five that was determined in the very first Utara vote was still there on the tribe and were the only ones that comprised basically the tribe. So they basically felt like it was just down to friends. They felt like they could trust each other. It also is interesting, though, in retrospect, because we talked last week about how Steven really saw the game and scoped it out to make sure he got what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly enough, had he figured it out to make his way onto Celaton, chances are Celaton still continues to win out and he makes the merge. And here he does it. It's a really odd and quote unquote fun way of thinking about how just when you think that you really rig the odds in your favor and are able to get the optimal lineup, sometimes a series of unfortunate events comes and you find yourself leaving the game way earlier than you intended to back during that swap.
Yeah, we did get a question about, like, would it have been better for Steven to be on the other tribe? And, like, probably yes, because they probably aren't losing a challenge, because Steven obviously is strong, even if he is replacing someone like a Solly or a Xavion. They're still a very, very strong tribe. So you never know how to go, but he probably is making the merge at that point. I mean, Altov did say something that I thought was interesting, where he kind of indicated that if Jenna had still been there, they would have considered throwing challenges. They're like, he's like, oh, now that Jenna is gone, we can just go full steam ahead. And I assume that's what he meant, which I think would have been terrible for Celaton. As I said last week, they never should have been throwing challenges. The best thing that could have happened to them is that they just bonded with this, you know, Cella 2 majority that they have. I mean, never had to hurt anyone's feelings and never had to put off what would be three allies, or if they got rid of one of them, two allies. So I think that also worked out for the best for Celaton. I think things were working out badly or well for some people, even if it wasn't super intentional.
Yeah, talking about Celaton for an instance, the lone strategic content we really got was Graham vocalizing to us, and Sully vocalizing to us as well, that had Cella 2 gone to Tribal Council pre-merge, that Sully would have been the one to go there. And it's not necessarily due to any sort of tribe dynamic. It was basically because they felt like Bootle and Val were two of the more easily swayable people in the trio, which I find interesting, given that they seem to be the ones that had relationships with other people in the tribe, whereas I don't know who Sully really had a relationship with, because he seemed to be complaining about everybody back when we used to see him. So I thought that would have been an interesting choice. I wonder if they're going to regret their decision, because there's a chance now that Sully can win an immunity challenge and one of them can go. So essentially he is robbing them of safety that they might need in that moment. But Graham also throws out another interesting piece, I think in episode 9, that yes, Sully would go, but if they faced another vote after that to get Bootle and Val back on their side, they might cast off Xavion. And I find that really interesting, that again, there is this core three, apparently, of Graham, Moira, and Altoff, and I guess a two within there of Graham and Altoff, and they would be more than happy to get rid of one to keep two after Solly's gone.
Yeah, and I don't know how that would have worked, because obviously you're putting someone off to bring them back, and because it is a 4-3 or a 3-1-3 or what would be a 3-1-2, that's why I'm saying they're so lucky that they got to just be a seven and no one had to see how it would go. And I think Shane even says, like, it's so important that they win that challenge so that kind of dissension can reign, and that never happened. And I think that that was a blessing in disguise for Celaton. I mean, not in disguise. I mean, clearly it's great to keep the tribe together. That was just a straight blessing.
No, it was a blessing right there. It was a naked blessing.
Yeah.
No disguises on it whatsoever.
Yeah, that was great for them. And if we're looking ahead to the merge, we can talk about how we think it'll go. But I think that I could see Solly and his allies. And again, I don't have like a good name for that alliance. There's like no like portmanteau I can really do with the name. It's very much like Solly and Co, I feel, because especially Val has been so purple. But I do think that they're probably going to go with Celaton. I mean, Solly and Shane have no love loss. I think that's kind of like the natural step, because I think they've really been vibing. They've won a lot of challenges. There's like a very specific party music that happens every time Cella 2 win.
Specifically when Cornet comes back and does his speech, like trumpets blare in the background. Like he is really giving you the Pat Roberts, like Tony Robbins, I'm pumping you guys up speech. They were able to practice it a lot, the Celaton pump up music that we hear it so many times. So, unfortunately, now we could never hear the chick chick boom of the Celaton cheer no longer.
Yeah, I mean, the Cella 2 cheer, because this is, I mean, they were like, it's kind of interesting how both captains had a more winning tribe. as we've discussed, I think Sivu says that David is cursed because it's like whatever tribe he's on is probably going to lose more. And then he's kept around for strength, which is just like a funny way. I don't think it's his fault, but it is funny that David, of all people, is kept around for strength. So I just think it's like the natural step that Seller 2 will stick together for at least a couple of votes. And I think that's what they should do. I think it makes more sense. Like, they haven't, no one needed to get voted out. They haven't had any bad blood with them. I think it just kind of works. And I still think they can be in like prime position to then turn on them eventually. Whereas like, if you go with old Utara, there's so much division there. Like, you can vote out Steven, but like, there's just, it, you know, you can't unring that bell. And there still is bad blood with Shane. So I don't see them kind of getting together, because I think it would kind of be just like this tribe that doesn't like each other, kind of like maybe like a Kasaya running the game, which, even though Kasaya did it, is usually difficult to do with all like those individual personalities having a really negative effect on each other.
Yeah, and I agree that I could imagine them at least sticking together, Sela 2, that is, for a couple of votes. And then I could see that trio trying to do what Scoopin and Lisa did in the Philippines and try to be a bit of that fulcrum and maybe pick up a Sivu and say, okay, maybe if they, you know, make the final eight, for example, pick up Sivu and then maybe, you know, try to pick up another Celoton member. Because something that I really wish we had seen in this whole post-swap era of editing was, Graham vocalized it, but I really wish we could have seen it more, these Celoton members getting on with the rest of Celoton. Because
you heard the music?
I mean, I heard the music. I suppose that's the equivalent of it, and which great work music editor is really pulling their weight in that regard in terms of the storytelling. But to that point, it really does seem like, from what Graham was vocalizing, that their intention was, okay, this is Operation Butter Up the Newbies. Mm-hmm. Really feel like they're welcome, get them in the fold. And I can imagine if they're going to get to that merge, to your point, it's going to be a lot more, what have you done for me lately? And if you're looking at, okay, here's the sketchy old tribe members who voted one of our allies out, versus, hey, this is our new tribe. We never actually had a vote to sort of forge bonds, but everyone seemed to get along really well. Of course you go with the latter. Of course you make it this vote to forge your bonds, at least for now. So I totally agree. I think Nutara is screwed come merge, and I think Sivu is counting his lucky stars that he has somehow to hopefully bail out of that sinking ship.
See, I think that Sivu will be okay, because I think that it makes sense for them to bring him in whatever, like, whatever way they go. They think he voted with them. They have a relationship there, and that gives them the numbers. Like, when I was debating this, I was outvoted in the Gatesgus household, because both my brother and husband thought that Solly and co should go with old Utara, because then if they, you know, if they do whittle it down, then they'll have four with Sivu over Marion, Shane, and David would be kind of like, I don't know, a loose man at that point, probably with Marion and Shane. Like, it's never going to get down to that seven, but it gives them more of a numbers majority, whereas they're at best a 4-4 with Celoton if they bring in Sivu. But I just don't think it's going to get down to that. And I think whichever way they go, they should definitely switch, do the pendulum strategy. It's just that, as we've learned, and as we just talked about in the Flip podcast I did with Taryn Armstrong, it's really difficult to do that. And I don't know if Solly and Co. are the group to do it. I definitely think maybe with Sivu, that would be more helpful, considering he's someone who has everyone thinking he voted with them based on a numbers anomaly, and they're just going with it. But that's difficult. I don't know if that's what's going to happen with this group.
I'm so sad that Sivu has really, he's not gone full Val, but I feel like he's sort of faded into the background. He had that really great confessional that you mentioned before in episode 9, where he's basically just drops this bomb of, yeah, everyone on Utaro thinks I voted with them. And the fact that he's still maintaining that lie, I mean, I think he very much got away with the fact that every single Utaro vote, actually every single vote in this pre-merge after the Killarney vote, was unanimous. So he could very easily just go along with what the tribe wants. He hasn't really shown his true colors yet. That's incredible on his part. And I wish that we had, you know, heard more from him, I guess, in preparation for the merge. I can understand why we focused a lot on Shane, Marion, Steven, Sinet, that part of the alliance, because those were the more prominent ones. But I do feel like, unfortunately, by proxy, Sivu has sort of been the more unspoken member of the alliance.
Yeah, like, I miss Sivu as a character. And also, just when you get one confessional where he just drops the bomb of everyone thinking that he voted with them, and then I had to go back and be like, I guess I did just read five votes, that makes sense, and then go back and see if we saw any fallout, which we didn't. Then you're like, wow, he's really doing some stuff in the background. Like, he said Russell was his favorite player. He's doing some really sneaky stuff, and he's getting no airtime, and I really don't appreciate that. So I think Sivu is in a great spot at the merge. I think he's going to be pivotal, because I think what it is with Sivu is, like, he's either pulling over three old Utara allies to get a majority, or he's jumping ship. And I think that he has a good enough read that it'll be like, all right, this isn't happening, and now I'm Team Celoton, and then hopefully it'll break down at a point where I can just be with Solivel and Buchlay. So I think he's in a great spot, and I think that he, Solivel and Buchlay are who I feel clear will be in the majority at the vote at the merge. I think that they'll be going with old Celoton, but either way, I think that they are in the pound seats on the merge.
Can we talk about David for a second? Because back to what you said before, loving, you know, bottom goddess David here, able to somehow, Survivor sucks term from the Amazing Race days, despite being outnumbered, what was it, 5-2 at the swap, is able to make it through three votes to somehow make the merge, which is fantastic. I do think that his whole WYSIWYG attitude of what you see is what you get really helps. I do think the particular people that he swapped over with also helps, that all he needed to do was basically just wait. And the people in this alliance started really poking at each other after all this time, especially with Steven. I think David really benefited from Steven self-destructing. But that being said, we got this conversation from Shane and Marion in episode 8 when deciding between David and Sinnet that I found very interesting, where Shane has all but written off David, right? He says that David can't be a double agent. He's not smart enough. I would know if David was that good. David's career is too independent. He spends all his time away from people, that he doesn't have the people skills that you and I do. So let me ask, if that is some perspective to a possible jury vote, despite the really incredible feats of survival David has, is he drawing dead at this point?
No one is drawing dead, as we just discussed. You never know. You just got to sit next to Jean or one person who will screw up Final Tribal Council. You never know how to go.
But yeah, I'll revise that to ask, is he at the bottom of the winner's equity at the moment?
From a game perspective, maybe. From a edit perspective, Val is the most purple and definitely can't win. But like, for someone like David, I mean, I think last week I compared him to Tara Pitt, who was a Survivor Final Tribal Council loser. I do think he is long for the game at this point. For someone who has been to seven tribal councils, who has won one immunity challenge, and who has been in the bottom two five times but never lost, it's been dicey. But coming into the merge, I think he's definitely long for the game. Like Shane might think that they're going to kind of take him out of vengeance. Like, he didn't really even do anything to them. If anything, they did much more to him. So I don't think anyone's wasting their time or their vote on David for a very long time, if ever. I just think it'll be tough, yes, to get the votes to win. But again, you just never know. So I have a little bit of hope in my heart. I still don't feel great about it because, as I've said, it's like if David wins, we would have heard that this is like the best season ever, probably. So just like from that meta perspective, I don't feel good about it. But he's long for the game now. Let's see where he goes with it.
Yeah, I am all in on however long this David train keeps taking us before it finally comes to this stop. I love this idea that this ornery, oldest guy in the game who really was digging his hole deep on day one when he was making all these alliances when he didn't need to, for him to be able to make the merge and somehow, you know, find an idol, then lose an idol and somehow not go home with it, to again escape being the boot despite being outnumbered 5-2, facing down a 5-person alliance that was formed in their very first vote, is pretty astounding. And part of it is due to circumstances, and part of it is just due to the way that David presents himself. To that point, I do love the oppositional thinking as well from these tribes, where, like I mentioned before, Shane has this argument of, yeah, they're going to vote David off because he'll sort of serve as a bitterness vote of what he did to Jenna. Cut to Celoton, and they say, oh, David's still around. Well, that's good. That means that maybe he'll flip back over to us. So really, I know that, you know, the trio on Celoton and Sivu are probably the most appealing in terms of flippers, but I still think David has room to maneuver as well. I do not think his bed is nearly as made in New Tara as much as Shane and Marion. He could very easily, I think, go back to Celoton and be like, hey, remember the Rugrats alliance? I was able to survive so I could come back over to you guys. I don't know how much to be able to buy it, but David at least has relationships with these people that Shane and Marion don't.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's pretty well ensconced in New Tara. I just think from a personal perspective, he felt really hurt by being on the bottom and by what everyone said about him in touchy subjects. Like, I think that's where he wants to go. But you do hear Graham saying that David could work with them. So I think that the option is open to him. Like, we see Shane and Marion talking about David as a player. He works alone. He's a farrier, which is something I had to, look up when I heard he was that, because it wasn't a profession I knew about. He works with horses, not people. So he can't be a double agent. And this was one of a few examples in these two episodes where I thought Shane is now crossing the line from confidence to arrogance. And It's not good from a game perspective, because like Cochrane has talked about how paranoia can be a really good thing. And he doesn't have that. He says he's going to be in the final two. He says he knows he's overconfident, but he and Marion are the only ones with these skills. And I'm like, Sivu made everyone think that he voted with them. Like, that's not true. And it's not good to underestimate your opponents to the point where you're telling them to their face that they're going to go home next to an idol that they can take and they might take. And even if they don't take, they could have taken it. So it was a bad move. So this was the first time where I feel like my winner pick Shane, spoiler alert, but current Chizzy leaderboard winner Shane, I did the math on the Chizzy leaderboard, we'll get to that, I felt cracks here, because I was like, this is a downfall coming, Shane. Like, you are way too confident, and it could have bitten you, in episode 8, probably wasn't going to, but it could have, and it will bite you eventually. So you better start realizing that other people are playing and that they're playing well, and one of those people is David. He is doing a fine job.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, what Shane doesn't benefit from here is that he hasn't met Celadon.
But he met Sivu, and Sivu's playing well. And he still thinks he's the only one playing well, he and Marion.
Yeah, and he feels like he's this guy. I mean, everyone seems to be counting out Sivu somehow, to the point where Steven had that really misguided comment, right? The really face-palming in retrospect of, oh, me, Shane, and Marion, we're all in the same position in the alliance. We all say everything to each other. We're all in the know. We write each other little notes and put them in our lockers. And I do feel like in Shane not really knowing an entire other half of this group, in fact, the majority of people, or at least the Celadon four that are going to come into this game, especially someone like Graham, who has shown a lot of capacity, and Moira too in the past for strategic acumen, that's not going to be good for Mr. I am in charge of this game. I'm, Marion and I are the best. No one can meet where we are right now. Yes, he's safe right now with an idol, but I totally agree from a storytelling perspective. Shane avoided getting bit by a little dog here, but I think he has a big old dog bite coming once we hit the post-merch.
Yeah, and you think that David could go either way? I don't think he will. But I think he has the capacity to, and that's the difference where Shane is like, He wouldn't be good enough to do it. And I'm like, look, he's been acting this whole time. He's making I'm bad faces at the camera while next to Steven. He loves to look at the camera and kind of, next to someone or over their shoulder and make faces, which is always really great TV. I think he could do it. I don't think he will. You think he might. Either way, you're underestimating him, and that's not good in Survivor.
Exactly. You can't really count out your competition when maybe was this a number of days played as well? Because what, they're like day 16 in episode 9. So there's only a week and a half left. Could just be a matter of I played this game for, more than 2 weeks, pretty much in control of every vote. I know what I'm doing. I'm going to crush this game. When really the game is kind of just getting started when you hit the post merge, speaking. Or things just shift into another gear that I think, much like we've experienced many a time, that people think they're in control in the pre-swap stage of things, and then a swap changes things up. Now we're getting into a stage here where I think Shane feels like he was able to figure out how to do the pre-merge portion of the game. Like you said, he was really beating this drum of keep this group united, keep the tribe strong, let's get rid of the, weed out the bad personalities and the weak players. And now is when you get to a brand new faction of variables in the game and things turn individual. And I fear that Shane and Marion by proxy might lose the grasp that they thought they had so masterfully.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard when you do have control for so long to realize that that doesn't mean you'll have control forever. I'm really interested to see where David goes, especially. I think the Cat with Nine Lives storyline is always fun to track. Like, how far can they take it? He has used 5 lives so far, being literally in the bottom 2 of the people to go home, but not being the person to actually go home. I thought it was kind of fun here that Steven thought that David would be the peace offering. to Stellaton, like, hey, we got rid of this person that you don't really like. Whereas, like, actually, Steven was the peace offering to all Deutara members who might now want to work with you. People keep underestimating him, and I'm like, keep doing it, because I would maybe vote for him to win. Like, he survived, and it's miraculous that he's done so.
I do wonder, I don't remember much about the post-merge, but I, for the near future, can only imagine David going home if there are split votes on Nutara and Shane plays an idol, or Marion plays an idol. And David, if they split the votes on David, or the Nutara members voted on David for some reason, that's the only way I can see him going here. I think David, Sivu, Sully, Val, Moira, I think they are all very, very safe for the time being. Maybe not Sully, because there might be, like you said, there's that whole Rupert and Pearl Islands thing of, well, he is really good at challenges, let's vote him off now. But I feel like those other four have a very good chance of at least making it to the middle of the post-merge. And once that happens, and you know, if they become 4 out of 7, they can really take this game and run with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's so hard for David. When you're always second last, it means if someone does have an idol or something, then you are going to go home. But yeah, I think this has been a dicey spot for Shane and Marion. Shane especially, not Marion, but Shane is way too overconfident. But I think that they just got put in a bad position. Possibly Shane and definitely Steven put off Utara way too much to the point where they're not going to vote for them, in my mind. I don't think that they're going to have a majority here. Plus, they lost so many challenges that they lost the numbers. But I think that they've now done the best with that bad situation, which is to try and get the majority to keep David. You know, again, he might go back to Celoton. They have definitely lost like a more secure member, maybe in Steven, who wasn't going anywhere else, but who it was becoming difficult to work with. And I think just promoting that general sense of fluidity, like, hey, we got rid of Jenna, but then we did keep David. We're not even seeing this as original tribes. Like, are you guys? That is so outdated. We are definitely just seeing this as just like a group of people voting in some way, and we'd love to work with you. And I think that by keeping David, they kind of put their money where their mouth is to say, like, anyone can vote anyway, and it's not OG tribes, and it's not swap tribes, and it's not any tribes, and all it is that, like, you know, this is a fluid game, and we can all work together. So I think that promoting that sense come the merge, even if it doesn't work, was a good move.
What are names, man? You know what? Zan walked off with that flag when he left. We don't even have something to demarcate what our tribe is. We're just a gathering of people here on a beach. That's all we are. We're just stardust manifesting itself in the South China Sea. You know what I'm talking about, man?
Yeah, like, what even is Stella 2? That sounds like something made up 7 years in the future. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Utara is just an assemblage of letters created by ancient Greeks thousands of years ago. You can refer to me by a symbol I draw in the sand, which you hopefully will not write down tonight when we go to Tribal Council.
Yeah, I think it works, and I think that it worked to take out Sinet to do it, and I think that immunity was so crucial so that they could keep every number that doing it from a physical standpoint made sense. I think all the logic made sense. It's kind of that Steven thing of logic makes sense, but work on the delivery. Don't tell her to her face and leave her with an idol. I cannot be more clear that I did not like that move.
Yeah, and I think that had things gone a different way, had they won the 3 post-swap challenges, that would have been optimal too, because their alliance of 5 would have stuck together. You'd assumed that Sully, Bootlay, and Val would have been the 3 votes on Celoton, and then you basically have like a super majority on, because then you could probably flip David over conference
and you're
6-5. Basically at the merge.
Yeah,
exactly. So that would have been obviously optimal, but it also shows how important challenges can be, how you can do strategy, but sometimes it just comes down to numbers. Speaking of which, I do love how Mark Fish's degradation of leadership got to the point where in episode 9, when they lost the challenge, Mark Fish was just like, yeah, you guys do your own thing. I know you have a plan anyway. I have no involvement here. I'm not even going to give a big speech. Put the trumpet down, Russ Landau, South African equivalent. I'm not going to say anything here. You guys just do whatever you want. I'm going to sit back and not do anything for a while.
What would have happened if they correctly, I think, said to Mark Fish, like, hey, can you hold the idol before we tell someone to their face that they're going home? Would he have been like, that sounds heavy. Like, that's a big idol.
Yeah.
That looks like a bomb. What if I get stopped at airport security if I forget to take it out of my pocket?
No, it would have been like something out of Jack and the Beanstalk, where you'd be able to, Sonic could just grab the idol off of a sleeping Mark Fish, because chances are he just like left it in his back pocket or just out in the open and was sleeping on top of it.
I love that idea that they're like, look, we can't let Sonette steal it, we're going to give it to Mark, and then she just takes it from him while he's asleep.
Yeah, or she could honestly just ask Mark, hey, Mark, can I have this idol? And he's like, yeah, sure, why not? I don't care. Leave me alone. I got Z's to catch before Tribal Council.
Yeah, look, the captains are seeing this a very different way. Mark has taken a step back from the game. Corne says he couldn't have done better as a captain. Possible. Maybe don't tell the other tribe that you've given Jenner an idol. That would have been a way to do a little bit better. That's just something that comes to mind for me.
We have some notes, Corne. I do wonder, again, we were speaking about the degradation. Is Mark kind of over it at this point? I mean, imagine losing a lot of challenges in a row doesn't help, but he just seems so laissez-faire about the attitude of Survivor in general, to the point where I could imagine him not even wanting to go to Tribal Council. But here's Corne, the camp counselor, really gung-ho about it. I guess it's just the difference that a challenge winning streak can make. And though I guess Utara did have that bri, and they did have, quote-unquote, the moral victory in the tie that ensued in the fruit challenge,
sure,
it wasn't enough for Mark Fish to really feel like he had a hands-on type of role in the game.
Well, I think, Corne is more confident at this point than he should be, considering that he did give the idol information away, and then Jenna did go home, which leads me to one of my other favorite subplots, Celoton trying to play a game of Clue and guessing how Jenna possibly went home with an idol that they just gave her. And I definitely feel like Corne should be sitting there like, oh no. But he's not, and he's still super confident. Some fun ones. So Moira wonders if she quit. That's how bad this was. Mm-hmm. That it's like she literally would have had to quit. Altoff thinks that maybe she gave it to David and then they split the votes. And I just want to say that in this timeline, that is like the worst move ever. She got so badly snowed in that she gave it to someone she wasn't even aligned with. They split the votes, and that meant that she went home. Like, that would be outrageously terrible.
And the line from Utara that Shane was telling David, right, was that they basically voted her out with the idol in the pocket.
Yeah.
That they said it was going to be a blindside on David, but instead they voted out her instead.
Yeah, and that makes sense. Like, I know that, like, when Russell was trying to come up with how Parvati's still in the game when he got the idol from JT, and we have talked about how the similarities in that and one tribe giving the other an idol, that tribal council sound like, I mean, it could have happened in Heroes versus Villains of all seasons. It wouldn't have even been like that much crazier than the villains tribal councils, but it did sound completely crazy, and it was like complete fan fiction. Whereas I like that Utara just go with, we just blindsided her with an idol in her pocket. It's like Occam's razor. That's the most obvious thing to do. But I do think as well that helped out here, because voting out Steven feeds into the perception that Stella 2 are already creating, where maybe she did give it to David somehow, and then if Mary and Shane or Steven go home, it means he's idled them out. So if they kind of don't talk first and let Stella 2 say, hey, it's not really working with the names if I have to constantly correct myself, right? But if they say, hey, David, wow, you must have been given the idol and idled out Steven, that just makes so much sense, and David's just like, yep, then I think that'll work really well, because they're just willing to believe that.
Could you imagine, though, sitting down? So what happened over there at Utara? What do you think happened? and I'll tell you if you're right or wrong.
Well, I think they just need to just, like, not talk and then just, I don't know, get Stella 2 to talk first. It doesn't really work, does it? But I think that their story is the best one. Xavion thinks that David has slipped, which was the right read. Graham is the one person who's like, they probably stole it. Ding, ding, ding. We have a winner on this very fun game of Clue. It was, again, like, that's probably Occam's razor in itself in this idol stealing season where idols keep getting stolen.
Yeah, and that's also going to come into play as well, because if you go along with Moira or Altov's cockamamie theories, you underestimate the opposition. But I do think if you're equipped with the assumption that there are two idols on the other side, it might be tough to try to split votes around that or plan ahead for that. But at least you have that in mind instead of, you know, Jeremy Collins style being surprised by a second idol popping up in the same tribal council. Or Parvati style, I should say, going back to our comparison.
Yeah, so again, I think they'll be okay because I think they will have the numbers. But yeah, this was just like a fun little game for me because it's an interesting thing. You give someone an idol, they're one person. Then you show up to the next challenge and they are out of the game, and you can understand how questions were asked about how this happened.
I just love that, at least from what we saw, I don't know, hopefully we'll have an opportunity to talk with people after the fact, was there indeed fury and fire against Cornet? Even in the moment when Cornet does his not so subtle handoff to Jenna, did he walk back to the mat and they're like, WTF, Cornet, that was way too over the top. Show a little bit of mystique, man. Did Cornet, I can imagine that Cornet himself did not feel necessarily any guilt, because again, bless Cornet's heart, I don't think he really still understands a lot of parts of Survivor at this point, or he wouldn't have done what he did. But I can imagine from like Graham, Moira, and Althoff's perspective, they have to feel at least a little bit of blame on Cornet for what happened here.
I don't think they know what just happened. Like, Graham obviously thinks the idol was stolen. I don't think they heard what Cornet said to the other tribe quite softly. And Moira thinks that Jenna quit. So they don't know that the idol was stolen. I think maybe when they find out, they'll be mad. They'll probably be like, look, Cornet, we've already reduced you to the role of sweet potatoes. And at least sweet potatoes don't give away all our secrets. What we're saying is that you're less to us than sweet potatoes are.
Yeah, that should really have been the reward of, you can trade away your captain for more sweet potatoes. That should have been one of the extra rounds in the fruit challenge. And I don't know, it would have been a coin toss for Celotana, for being honest.
I would have loved if Nico's like, you can, okay, the reward is you can give away your captain for, they're like, we'll do it. He's like, you haven't even heard what you'll get in return. They're like, we don't need anything. We give him to you. We pay you for this.
Yeah. Now, can we trade them for the sportscasters? They might be able to provide just like a little bit more input than these two at this point in the game, or just give us steers. I know that that sponsorship doesn't exist yet, but we'd really just love more food in exchange for our captains. We'll sell them for it.
Yeah, these poor captains. I mean, each in their own way, just failing spectacularly. I also love the idea of the cursed idol. The fact that they verbalize that at Tribal Council, that it did go from getting stolen from David. And we've talked about how that was probably really good for David, but not great for Shona. It curses her. It curses Jenna. Maybe David is the one who's cursed it, right? It was fine in his hands.
Mm-hmm.
Shona steals it. She goes. Then it goes to Jenna. And then she goes. It gets it stolen from her. And now it's in Shane's hands. And I think that, yeah, he is getting way too overconfident. And maybe that's the curse happening.
Well, though, you said, so the curse, it was fine when it fell in his hands, but did it take effect when it fell in his pants? Could it have been, Shannon, that David's underwear possesses some bad juju, and now this idol just, you know, blemishes everything it touches?
Thank you for that visual. David's underwear is the antidote. That is what's protecting him from the curse. Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, right. I guess you could assume that David's still wearing the underwear at this point.
Can we just go back to how good the fire jewel was in episode 2? That it's still paying dividends with the same idol that has just been cursing everyone who doesn't have magic underwear throughout the entire game, going into the merge where it may curse more people. It is scary. It is pirate themed. It works on every level. Not a sports level, but every other level.
Yeah, I do love that has really, again, a lot of really weird storytelling choices and series of events over the course of the pre-merge, but one that has really bore fruit and not in the bountiful variety that has you competing in 5 different rounds on a reward challenge, but still is that day, that episode 2 decision made by the captains as to who they think was going to go next, that just led to, yes, only half of them have made the merge, but it led to so many different things between the whole things going on with the idols over at Celotan, moving over to Utara, to the big schism between Bootlay and Sonette, to nobody trusting Bootlay, to now apparently Steven just turning on Sonette because he basically tells Shane and Marion, well, clearly we would all tell each other if we had the idol, so Sonette must have the idol and didn't tell us about it.
Yeah,
just due to his paranoia. Like, this is really a decision and a challenge that has manifested itself over the course of the next 14 days.
Yeah, you've got to love that Steven has accused near everyone who isn't the person who actually has an idol, the two people who have idols, that they are keeping a secret from him.
Yeah, and I would love to hate when he sat Sonette down and just was so jerky with, okay, I'm going to ask you if you have the idol, but before I do, let me just say I may or may not know where it is, basically trying to, like, I don't know, extort her. Or at least attempt to extort what he thinks he might know about her, basically saying, okay, answer the question. But before you do, know that I already know the answer to the question, so I know if you're lying.
Well, you're a parent. Like, this seemed like, and this, Steven can come across like this, and it's probably not been wired into his circuiting, like, don't talk to people like this, but, like, this was kind of how you discipline a child, right? Like, okay, someone drew on the walls now. I know who it is, but if that person wants to come forward, like, is this a style of parenting that you use against your toddler?
Well, yeah, I don't feel like it worked about as well in Sonette as it did in a toddler, in that he would not be receptive to it. I think that works or if you have multiple parties. In effect, if there's only one person in the room, I don't think it works as well to be like, well, it wasn't me, it wasn't mom, it wasn't the dog, it must be the two-year-old. This more so seemed like the parent walks into the kid's room and is like, do you know why I'm talking to you right now?
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to be the one to fill in the answer. What you want Utara David to do to sell it to.
Yeah, week, I was just thinking that.
That this Steven's not really pulling up her, especially to a parent herself in Sunette, who follows it up by saying, I swear on my daughter's life, I don't have the idol. You don't try to parent the parent here.
It doesn't help also to be dead wrong. It's like, you're just going to go with that gut instinct, which is more wrong than the other wrong thing that you just thought is with the people you keep talking to about this plan, Steven. I'm so sorry to tell you that. You would think they had somehow installed x-ray vision so that you could see it, or that you could find it in the pee place where Shane left it. But yeah, I definitely feel like this work? This is definitely what Utara going to do. I keep correcting myself. These have not worked as like 2 week tribe swap names, but yeah, they should go up to Selatu and be like, why do you think Jenna's not here? I know the
exactly.
answer, but do you know the answer?
So maybe then Shane and Marion did miss out on getting Steven to the merge because they know this is a tactic he has in his toolbox that he could very easily pull out with these people.
It would go on infinitely forever. I know the answer. No, I know the answer, but do you know the answer? Yeah, I know the answer, but do you know the answer?
Yeah, and the problem would be that Steven would come away with the complete opposite answer of what it is.
Okay, guys,
this is exactly
happened. She quit.
This is exactly what happened. No, Steven, you were there. You know what happened.
Yeah, like, I've come back with the information, which is that Jenna quit. You voted her out. Like, you were part of the idol stealing, but he wasn't, as we know.
Nope. Yeah, I told exactly. you, I so wasn't. I watched my... I don't even remember being there. I wiped my memory. My RAM has been demagnetized of the entire situation. Can we also say that...
I love this whole thing. Just like, Steven coming back with information for their tribe, and they're like, Steven, no. No, we were the ones trying to manipulate them. We're not getting information. It was our tribal council. He's like, all right, I'm going to go back into battle for this endless
I also got to say, Nutara is really killing it with the Jim Halpert game of giving looks to the camera. Because even separate from what David did again in this episode, right in front of Steven, you had Steven talking to Shane and Marion about the idol. And then Shane and Marion just looked straight at the camera like, oh my God. And I can imagine they're probably like, what, 6 feet behind Steven at this point. And David is mugging to the camera while Steven has his hat over his face. Poor Steven. I don't know. Maybe he has his blinders up or something. He was just completely ignoring everyone doing the get a load at this guy camp right in front of him.
Yeah, definitely no x-ray vision. And Marion had a lot of good one-liners in this week, I thought. Like, she has always been really funny, but I thought, like, if you don't want to get your hands dirty, then, you know, keep them out of the cookie jar. I'm ad-libbing, but it was something like that. And there was a lot of good lines. Like, there was more to this episode. Come on, Mike, now that we've discussed it, you're more into the week.
No, I mean, we were discussing what comprised 15 minutes of, you know, an hour, 2 hour combined of challenges, which I will say the challenges were interesting. I'm very glad that they actually brought back for the final challenge in episode 9, one of the more forgotten challenges, but unique challenges in Survivor history, which I like to call the fourth grade science experiment of roll the cannonball from any location at any angle and try to crack the tiles that they did back in Nicaragua. I'm glad they brought it back, even if it was a weird challenge. But now we got, you know what? I'm actually very excited for the individual proportion in many ways. And one of them are the challenges, because they took a very unique structure and perspective to challenges in the pre-merge aspects of this season. So I hope we're not going to get more stand on a perch and hold a ball over your head, like we see a lot in Modern Survivor.
Yes, I hope so too. But I mean, they've been very cool and very pirate sports themed. So I'm just, you know, what more individual sports can we have in a pirate theme?
Stand on one leg like a peg leg as long as you can.
But that's not a sport. You'd have to be like playing tennis at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Play racquetball. Serve back volleys to us while standing on one leg.
Yeah, I love that. Oh, and you're obviously doing it half in the water, half out, because that's kind of been a running theme. I love that you see that immunity challenge, that second immunity challenge, as a science experiment. I see it like the claw machine, you know, at the arcade, when you're like always on the side, you're like, go forward, now go back. My brother's girlfriend, Amy, from the Great Jason and Amy Amazing Race Winners, is like ridiculously good at the claw machine. You've never seen anything like it. Like, I've never seen a talent like this, and I feel like she would have completely aced this challenge, because it's all just death perception, and it's very much the same thing.
Well, and it's interesting, because this version, it was like, in that example, you only have a certain supply of quarters. right? You only have 12 tries.
Exactly.
As opposed to in the Nicaragua version, you had an unlimited try. So it was more so this weird sort of dichotomy of, okay, the first tribe to hit all five tiles or the one who hits more at the end of 12. And so Utara, unfortunately, bungles it here, not only due to their own lack of Amy-like confidence with it, but also the fact they're like, Celoton's gotta screw this up. We've got it. And nope, they just blaze a trail in front of them.
They were very good at it. It was mostly Altoff, and Altoff is obviously, you know, he is ready to go because he is still mad at Steven. Steven has angered Altoff, even though they've never been on a tribe together, because ages ago, Steven stole Wilson. Unnecessarily antagonistic social play, as we've talked about from Steven, mm-hmm. for someone that you were about to merge with who doesn't like you because you stole his mascot. I also thought it was funny that Altov is talking about it and then they cut him off like mid-confessional, like just like literally in the middle of a word. But I thought, unbelievable sass from Cella 2 when Nico says, you've wandered so much you can name it. There's only one name. It has to be Wilson. I was like,
yes,
burn. Absolute burn on that.
Yeah, this was an absolute dumpster of an episode for Steven. Just everyone dumping on him so much to the point where the other tribe said, remember this one thing you did like 6 episodes
so
ago?
Long ago?
We're going to get the final word on it. We're calling this Wilson. Because yeah, for those of you that might not remember, so back in the first couple of episodes, Celoton had a mascot. It was a coconut that had a little face on it that they called Wilson. I guess they left it behind during a challenge. Utara grabbed it. Steven specifically grabbed it from the challenge site, brought
and
it back to
it.
Utara. Yeah, and then he smashed it against the rock. And so it ends up coming to fruition here that the thing he did that long ago, much like that idol that ended up in David's pants, there was a curse attached. A spirit of Wilson got released. He needed vengeance. He can now shake off this mortal coil, or at least inhabit the visage of this tribal immunity idol, which is no more. Wilson gets the last word. Wilson gets revenge here. Wilson gets the chizzy, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird that they took the mascot and smurdered it for no reason. It probably wasn't the great way to make friends for when you're eventually going to have to play together. And look, I continue with my really bad habit of scrolling down while I peek between my fingers, of looking at the YouTube comments. I really have to stop. They haven't spoiled me yet, but they are pretty dumb and toxic. Actually, Sarah Carradine, she offered to pull the best ones for me that we could read out. And I was like, I don't know, they seem pretty toxic. I don't know if there'll be anything there, but I actually found
best.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the ones that aren't calling for death threats for the players would be really cool. No, but I actually found one that I thought was really funny, and it relates to how they killed Wilson for no reason. It said, if they allow stealing on Survivor, they should allow murdering.
Just one degree removed. Let's break as many laws on Survivor as possible.
Yeah, it's like our own version of Casual's Corner, but it's a YouTube comment, so it's just so much darker. Like, it's as confusing, and you can laugh at it. And it is quite casual, I feel, but also it's just, like, very hateful. It's more hateful than Casual's Corner. So I don't know if it's a well I'm going to be going to. I really need to stop scrolling down. It is a worst habit. Sarah Carradine, if you do find some fun stuff, I guess send it to me. But I just thought, once I saw this, I was like, stealing and murdering are not the same thing, especially when you're only allowed to steal idols, and I guess you're only allowed to murder coconut-shaped mascots.
Oh, could you murder idols? Could they break the idol in half and just do away with it entirely if they wanted to?
Well, because possession is 10/10 of the law on this season, if you break it in half, you actually both have an idol. So that's a fun fact.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. So you could divide it up. You could do like the end of Mean Girls, where you break up the tiara and you're safe now. You could create an advantage get in by breaking it up into enough pieces.
I want to see that. I just want to see Shane stand up there like Lindsay Lohan and just break it. And, you know, the heartbreak that would be, but it would make many idols. It just makes strategic sense.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect way to really cover your bases. I think that could be a really great way to do it. I guess we saw Dr. Mike, right? When he was supposed to combine his idol with Lauren's, he ended up throwing it in the fire. So I guess theoretically you can murder idols if you want to. It's just frowned upon.
Yeah, it's not a rule, though. It's just frowned upon.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a law against it in the game of Survivor. You can do it, just do you really want to?
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up.
CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Well, to segue to things that are never frowned upon, should we get to the Chizzy? And finally, so many podcasts into the season, the Chizzy leaderboard, which I did a lot of really unfun math to work out.
Okay, well, let's do it. Take it away, Jacob Sager-Weinstein, MC Color, the perfect duo to round out, even better than our sports commentators, our theme song commentators.
One, two, three.
Great job. Get out of those balls, gentlemen.
I'm so sorry that your nose is bleeding and that we'll never address it and that you don't get to have the reward. All right. So the Chizzy, also, when we add our points, I'm going to have to do math on the fly, which I really hate doing. But okay, I'm going to give 3 points to Marion. She was in control of both of these episodes. As I said, I liked her plan the best, and it was great for her, and she got her way. She had the closest connection to Sinead in episode 8 as well, so I think she was actually going to, you know, use her to get what she wanted, and I feel like she could have gone either way. It was the kind of thing where, like, Steven is annoying me, and if Sinead does it, that'll be fun, and if we maintain the status quo and are stronger for challenges, that's fine too, but, like, all I know is I'm fine and I'm in control, and she did it with, as I said, a lot of great one-liners at the same time, and I think that, as you've talked about, like, especially for her, going in with a potential shield in Steven isn't as good as going in with a possible majority that she's going to have to work really hard with the relationship she's built to kind of make it work at the merge. So hopefully she can do that, but I think she's put herself in the best spot possible in what was a very bad situation either way. I'm going to give 2 points to David. He keeps playing pretty well. He's clearly ingratiated himself well. And there are definitely other factors at play here. Obviously, Steven did some things wrong. Obviously, New Tara, have reason to want to make this seem really fluid and try and work with the whole big, fun, cosmic group that we will become at the merge. But he definitely didn't ruin anything. He acted well to cover the plan. And he keeps getting Chizzy points. So he is further up in these rankings than I would have thought before I did the calculations. And then I'm going to give a point to Sivu. Largely by default, because he didn't do anything wrong in these two tribal councils, and there was, as you've said, not enough happening at Stellaton for me to really give a point. I could kind of give an honorable mention to Graham for being the one to work out in the game of Clue what had happened to Jenna, but not enough for me there. I think Sivu, I need to give some retroactive points that apparently both groups think he voted with them. He should be rewarded for that, because it is crazy that that is still ongoing, even with, you know, a swap in the middle. He still deserves praise for it. And the plan is really good for him, I think. I think this is perfect. He will do really well with trying to reach across the aisle. Either he's going to bring some numbers over or they're going to bring him over, but I really think he's going to be fine. So I'm giving him the point there. For Shane, look, I like this plan. As I said, I think it did well for him, you know, keeping Steven in. As you said, I'm not super sure that Steven even would have been a shield. Shane might probably be further out in front, but it definitely was a factor. It was something that possibly, even as a right-hand man, is Steven going there, and also just like with his really negative connections, is there some personal stuff to that? Is he getting the warning shot before he can play his idols? It made sense to me that that's the way he wanted to go, but I also like that he stuck with his ally, and he let her get her way, and her plan was good for the majority and for their entire group as well. So I like that he did that, but I can't give him the vote because of episode 8, because he's telling Sinead that she's going to go and leaving her with a potential idol to steal. It's just way too overconfident, and I think symptomatic of his attitude to the game at the moment, which he should be very careful about, if I could go back 7 years in time and warn him. So I'm not giving him a point there, but some good stuff and some very bad stuff from Shane this week.
Yeah, I'm really trying to piece this out, because I mean, it's going to probably be the same configuration of people that you just spoke about, because yeah, Celotu has basically been discounted this week because we barely saw anything from them. They didn't really have much strategic will to exercise. And there are only four people left on New Tara, and the other two really bungled their exits in a manner of speaking. So it's going to be some combination of them. Okay, I'm going to give... I'll give a point to Shane. I'll throw a point to Shane. I was thinking of leaving him off the board as well, but I feel like he should get at least some credit, because I do agree, while he is not facing a good situation coming into the merge here, from a strategic perspective, I don't know if there was anything else he could have done than just like win challenges. I do agree that I think the way he approached Sinnet was just frustrating, and the way he just approached everything with that. But I do feel like when it comes to getting his ducks in a row, he has done an okay job in what is going to be a very uphill battle. So if he was forced to say, you have to go into the merge with four New Tara people trying to make it happen, he sort of is in the optimal situation at the moment. And so the point is really, I think, for him continuing to exercise dominance in this past week. So from that perspective, I'm going to give 2 points to Marion as well. From that perspective, she edges out Shane because I think she is in less imminent danger than him. And she was able to, in my opinion, convince Shane to make the correct decision in getting rid of Steven. And this is going to be strange, Shannon. I don't know if I have gone as much of off a hunch or a crumb of information when it comes to Chizzy acquisitions as I have been now. I'm going to give 3 points to Sivu. Okay. Why the hell not? Sivu was able to avoid all of this nonsense, right? It seems like he is not in the top tier of the New Tara majority because it was all Shane, Marion, and Steven. But that being said, if they trusted David, there was a very good chance that Sivu could have been gone next if they wanted to keep David around. But somehow he was able to remain in their good graces to get rid of Steven over him. That has to say something. And I do think of all the New Tara people, he is far and away the best positioned at the merge and the best position to go far right now, pending any sort of idle usage. So I think Sivu is monumentally set up to do well. I think it's a very under the radar position that he's played so far, but those are things that get you a million rand at the end of the day. And so it's odd to give him 3 points considering he had one confessional over the course of two episodes, but I want to give him credit where credit is due.
Yeah, so I think from Steve's perspective, like, he is in a really good spot because it's the combination of he has the relationships and he hasn't burned any bridges, which is rare from Utara, and I think he does have strategic acumen to pull it off. More than I think some other people in the middle position do. So I think he's in a pretty good spot, maybe one of the best spots at the merge, which is impressive considering people he's played the whole game with are in, I think, a much worse spot. And then someone like Shane, it's like, I like the Sinnet plan. I like getting rid of David as his plan. I like then going with the Steven plan. I like all the plans, but I think as we found out, so much is in just like how you are communicating things. And obviously Steven got very burned by that and that like social play. And I just think it worked out well now, and he's in an okay spot for where he could be now, considering, you know, it's a bad spot and he's just doing the best that he can. But it's like in the world where Sinnet does idle out, you know, in our fantasy worlds, actually Shane, but in reality, probably Steven, he's not in control of that. And actually he just had an idol stolen that he wants to use for himself. And he has an ally go not on his terms, which is very different to then voting them out yourself. So I do think that it was just way too risky. Like, I can't reward that.
So give us the numbers then. Do some math here and tell us how things are looking going into the merch here.
I cannot be blamed if I'm adding it up wrong on the spot. But as far as I'm aware, we have a new Chizzy leader based on the points today. I think Marion has now come in at 12 points. She's winning. Shane got your points, so now he's on 11.
Okay, so I think it makes sense that the two of them are also very close together, considering how hand-in-hand they've been the entire game.
Yeah, that does make sense. I mean, they've really been dominating it and going to, like, a lot of tribal councils, obviously, in, like, recent times, so that tends to get some Chizzy points, which is, you know, that's what we always say. If you want to get Chizzy points, go to tribal council. If you care about your game, stay away from tribal council, but that is the wrong choice. And then we have a lot of people on 7. Graham is on 7. He got 6 points week one, so that really helped. Xavion is on 7. David, now with my 2 points, is on 7. Sivu is now on 6. We have Moira on 5. Shona, dearly departed Shona, was on 2. Philip, dearly departed Philip, was on 1. Steven, dearly departed Steven, was also on 1. And Buchle has 1. So those are the points as they stand. And now that I have done the math, which I was really putting off, I can bring you those chizzy charts every week.
All right, so interesting. So who is left that hasn't gotten one? Val, Solly, and Altop are the only three?
Poor Val. I mean, she's just so purple. Like, I think that's it.
I know. Yeah. I mean, she could be in, I feel like, the Kelly Sharbaugh situation where maybe they do take aim at that Celitude trio, and unfortunately Val just sort of ends up on the other end of a vote, of an idol split or something, and ends up going there. Because, yeah, she really hasn't done anything to garnish much. And Sully, I feel like, unfortunately, I'm still out on Sully. I just feel like, unfortunately, he's become a little one note in that his irascibility and his thoughts about Xan were interesting in the beginning. But all we've heard about him the past week has just been challenges, challenges, challenges. And I want that guy who inordinately walked in with the captain's hat on Survivor South Africa back. So we'll see. Maybe
he's still wearing the hat.
Some tricks. He's still wearing the hat, but, you know, if he keeps doing the challenge stuff, I don't know if he's going to be earning that many more chizzy points, unless he's able to use that immunity to his advantage.
You would be Shane-level confident about your challenge ability if they brought in literal athletes and you kept beating them every single week as well, to be fair.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Though it doesn't translate to chizzy. Might translate to W's, but not to C's.
Yes. Altoff, I think, is probably a better player than we're giving him credit for. I think he's probably been overshadowed a bit by Graham, but he has been at the top of that tribe. It's just that they've been winning so much that it's hard to really give points to that. And then when we have given points, I feel like Moira was putting us up out there to do much that actively gave points, but then has also done more wrong. So I just think he's not really been in position to be getting points, but I think he's a solid player.
Yeah, I mean, I think out of that core four, Jenna gets the huge bump from her boot episode. He was by far the least visible. Seems like he has competent moments, and I think the fact that Graham wants to go with the end to the end with him now is definitely says something about how close they are. We just haven't seen enough of him, to be plain and simple. And I say that as the guy who just gave 3 points to someone who we didn't see a lot of either. But I feel like I could extrapolate a lot more from Sivu in that one confessional than I have from Altop so far.
In your defense, like in that one confessional, Sivu told us that he is playing every single person on Old Utara. It was a lot. It was a lot of information in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, and Altov's confessionals are about how he wants to take revenge for the deceased coconut mascot of Celadon.
Which was also really good, but they got cut off halfway through. The poor man, he was in the middle of a thought. He got cut. Go back and watch it. Like, why did they just ended it? Well, the other thing I would want to do here, but I'm not going to, is play the Biostrath Variety Hour theme song, because we got some really fun stuff with the sponsors, with Hunter's Beer. I'm not going to play it because at this point I feel like we're kind of saving it for Survivor South Africa season 8 in my mind.
Well, yeah, we're only a couple months out from it. Let's just like keep it in reserve for a little bit longer. Let that cheese age a little bit before we open it up.
It's beer and or it's Biostrath, but it's not cheese. What did you think of the Hunter sponsorship? Like, it made my heart happy, and my favorite thing about it was seeing it combined with the captains, because like they're all talking about how Hunter's is the best and Shane calls it a religious experience. Cut to Corne immediately undercutting the sponsor by being like, are we here to drink beer or win? And I was like, you're not getting an endorsement from Hunter's, Corne, but I absolutely love that you just, you know, took some of their money's worth and insulted them.
I don't know. Yeah, Corne definitely reminds me of that sort of wet blanket at parties, right? Of, this is fun, but remember, going to have a hangover in the morning, so make sure you ration out your water in between. That definitely seems like Corne at a rager, if you will. I think my favorite part was maybe Xavion knew who was sponsoring this season, but when Nico asked, you know, what goes well with the braai, and Savion specifically says Hunter's Dry, and there's a whole crate of them, I'm very confused in many ways. Is that just like a slogan that I'm missing out on? Does Xavion just like Hunter's that much?
Xavion is such a teacher's pet that I really do think that maybe before this, he just found out who was sponsoring it and was like, I'm just going to work it into every single conversation. And maybe it'll make the air. And it did. And it was a very good strategy on that point.
I wonder if in every reward, it's just been cut out. He has guessed Hunter's Dry or some other sponsor. And it hasn't been that every other time. And the one time he's right is the time they show it.
what goes great with chocolate cake? Hunt is dry. Like,
yeah. What goes great with letters from home? It's got to be Hunter Dry, Nico.
I mean, you can't get through that without some help. It's emotional. Yeah,
exactly. Nothing goes better with gaggles of fruit than some nice Hunter's Dry.
Well, speaking of fruit and getting to the questions, we had some questions about the fruit. Connor Sobersley says, if there was a BuzzFeed quiz to figure out which of the healing fruits you were, what do you think you each would be? Connor, there can always be a BuzzFeed quiz. You just have to make an account and then make it. So it's not something that exists beyond our capabilities.
And then just make the first question, which one of these fruit are you?
Why are you so mean about my BuzzFeed quiz? I put a lot of effort
into
it.
I love how obvious it is. So we've got, okay, so what? We have watermelon, we have dragon fruit, we have honeydew, we have the native version of the lychees, and we have the pineapple.
Rambutan, or as David would say, orangutan.
Oh boy. So we talked a little bit about this offline that, you know, South African, when they were being told, like, oh yeah, it's just like native lychees, everyone was fine with it. I know that you have dug yourself into many lychees once upon a time. I feel like lychees, they definitely exist in American markets, but they are certainly not as popular or populated as it may be elsewhere.
Yeah. So we were talking about this offline, and now the listeners are getting into a glimpse of our just incredibly interesting conversations.
Like, what fruit do you have over there?
Well, yeah, because I was like, do you guys have lychees? Because so I'm very much on the Marion train when she's like anti-fruit. And I thought that I agree. Like, if someone brings out fruit as a dessert for me, I'm like, and where is the chocolate? Like, that is not that's not a dessert, except for lychees, which in Australia they call lychees. But I cannot change because I don't know what identity I am and I don't know what my nationality is.
It's called orangutans.
Yeah, or the orangutans. Lychees / orangutans are like my favorite fruit, and it's not close. Like, they're the only thing that is actual dessert to me. They are so delicious. And considering rambutan is apparently just giant betta lychees, this sounds like what Shane would say is a religious experience. Immediately, you know, undercut it to, are we here to eat lychees or win? But really, it does sound amazing. And Mike, I made you taste Biostress, which I'm really sorry about. And if I can make it up to you, find a lychee, eat a lychee, thank me later. They are so good.
All right. I think I'm going to now pursue that next time I go out to the market safely just for you. Because it seemed like, you know, everyone was just having a great time with this. I'm a pretty big fruit person. I honestly am more of a vegetable person than a fruit person.
Don't say vegetable person.
Yeah, I'm more of a vegetable person. I actually would have loved, from my perspective, if this was five rounds of like competing for parts of a crudité platter, I would have been all over this. If you're like, okay, you get a sack of carrots, give it to me. You know, I'm ready to go. Give me that asparagus. I'll punch Mark Fish in the face to get some asparagus.
So if I'm less, okay, I think you just want to punch Mark Fish in the face.
No, I do not. He's a lovely, well, I won't call him a lovely man. He's a fine person.
He's something. He's definitely something.
He's certainly a man.
I'm trying to think, like, okay, so if you were to tell me the reward is fruit, as I said, not super on board unless it's lychees or giant betta lychees, which is rambutan. But if you were to tell me it's vegetables, I would just, that would be so much worse for me. Like, as a vegetarian, I hate fruit and vegetables.
You can eat them raw. You can roast them, especially if you have seasoning from those previous rewards. You can mix it in with the rice. Like, there's so much great texture stuff you can do and taste profiles.
I do not like vegetables. Like, and it is really hard as a vegetarian to be a vegetarian who doesn't like vegetables. Like, I had fried rice for dinner last night. Just like ate all the rice, just like leave all the vegetables. I'm a child, is what I'm trying to say.
I mean, you're a survivor contestant, actually, the way you ate fried rice last night. So I guess
I love rice.
So would you be the lychee then? Is that your just designated
the orangutan? 100%. It's the only good fruit. I'm now really want to get my hands on some rambutan.
Yeah, I don't know what I am. I'm definitely not the honeydew.
Okay, I'll make you a quiz.
Yeah, Bojack Horseman has taught me that honeydew is kind of crap. These are the only people I know that have actually talked well about honeydew. Over the course of my time experiencing it, I guess I'd be the pineapple, right? I'm just like a weird abomination of a person, much like a pineapple is.
I don't know how to respond to that, Mike. For a few reasons.
That's my trap. Yeah. What do you think? What do you think? I'm going to ask you first. What fruit do you think I am? But I know the answer, so you just go.
Okay. Oh, exactly. What do I think? Well, I think not pineapple, because pineapple is like prickly on the outside and sweet on the inside, but you're just sweet on sweet. So I would say probably So maybe the yellow watermelon, it's like, everyone loves it, you're super sweet, but also you're unique, you know? Like, it's not just normal watermelon, you also have, like, a bit of difference to you, but it's also just, like, a classic favorite. That's Mike Bloom.
Oh, and I have a little bit of a rhyme to me as well.
I mean, I was trying to give you a really nice compliment after you just called yourself, an atrocity of a person? Is that what you said?
An abomination of a person.
Yeah, you don't sound like you're in a good spot, so I'm just trying to, like, really hype you up. I'm kind of wanting to make this BuzzFeed quiz, but I can't just spend my whole day after we do these podcasts making BuzzFeed quizzes.
Especially for something you hate as much as fruit.
Yeah. What are the odds that you wake up tomorrow to a BuzzFeed quiz? What fruit are you?
I really want it, but I also want one of the options to be you are a vegetable.
So it's harder to make the more options there are. Like, sports person or pirate was a lot easier because you only had the two options. If I had to do sports person, pirate, or presenter, that would have been slightly harder, but an easier quiz for me. So I'm honestly on the fence about making this quiz. I'm hoping if I just keep talking about it, someone will make it for me and send it to me.
Yeah, hopefully someone gets to the quiz first, shouts their tribe name, and therefore they get the quiz before you do.
Yeah, I wanted to say about that, one of my favorite moments of this entire challenge was when they tied, and then Mark and Althoff very awkwardly hugged.
Yeah, and it was this weird, thing where they tried to build the next time on, right, where they did this, you know, coming to a head and then cutting to the confessionals, being like, this is so rude. And then it turns out right after all that happened, Mark Fish is like, okay, here you go. You hold on to it now. And Alta says, no, we'll wait for Nico to decide it. And then that's it. So just completely dissolved tension for a rare 15-second next time on soundbite.
Yeah, but it worked well because obviously just like taking pirate objects was very much the pirate theme. But then going to a video review, we're back at sports pirate. You got to have that even balance. So it worked really well.
I mean, it seems like the least pirate-like thing in the world to make it a tie. Right, nor should it have been a tie. They're just like, we don't care at this point. You both, it was also interesting that we get one of those rare, you know, much like we had in the very first challenge. Okay, it's round by round and you keep whatever you get for the round. Usually it's okay, whichever tribe wins however many rounds gets it. But maybe they just felt like everyone was so straggling that everyone needed to have fruit at that point.
What would be the pirate thing? Stab each other? Whoever stabs the other one first?
Yeah, well, they're all knives, and then you grab the knife, and then you stab the other person, and then you shout the tribe name, and then you go back, you verify the blood sample with Nico to make sure that it is indeed the blood from the other tribe, and then you get the fruit.
It makes sense, because if they're allowing stealing, like, they should be allowing murdering, so I think it makes a lot of sense.
Exactly, or at least stabbing.
Yeah. Okay, Michael Green asks, was the tribal result more strategy from the others to get rid of Steven, Steven's lack of a social game, or David inserting himself into the core alliance over the three episodes?
Can it be both?
Yeah, I was gonna say, okay, because I was like, is it so fancy to be like, it's all three, and if one of those things isn't happening, then they're not doing it?
It's always all three, it's just what is the balance? And from that balance perspective, I do think the biggest thing was probably Steven self-sabotaging, and then maybe second is David being able to just really come across as a loyal and honest person. Though I think really that just started right from when he sold Jenna down the river. I think he really sold himself as just a trustworthy person to them in that moment, that they really could just essentially count on him for the next two votes. So I think it's all those factors. It just depends on what the percentage of it is.
Yeah, and getting rid of Steven from a strategic standpoint and also Steven's lack of social game are like, they're so intertwined that they're the same thing, because you're getting rid of him because his lack of social game has put people off and may take allies away from you at the merge. So those things are the same thing. And that kind of hybrid is probably the main point. And then David. But the thing is, if David is coming off as really sketchy and hasn't done that well, then it's still not happening. So he has done well in doing that.
Exactly. And again, I think David has done really well up to this point. I think we have talked so much about Xavion backing off the clutch in the very beginning, trying to run the tribe, then having it blow up in his face and realize, okay, let me just nod and be the challenge guy. I think David has sort of done so to a certain extent as well, where he really got busted on day one, making so many alliances and was able to survive just due to everything going on with the Rugrats. And I think he's learned as well to really survive even in situations when his name is out there by just really being truthful and being honest and being open when other people aren't. So I do commend him for that too.
Michael Green also asks, what do you think Corne and Mark's roles will be after the presumably upcoming merge, as they just won't wait to be on the jury? Will they still be able to compete in individual immunity challenges and give it to whomever they want if they win? How will they get along with each other? Now, Mike, you've seen it, so you know. I'm having a tough time.
I know the answer, so why don't you tell me?
It works every time. This is definitely how you should be parenting, by the way. I'm having trouble thinking about how this will go. Like, I think that maybe they'll be split up for teams and rewards and they'll be leading those teams, but I can't understand how they'll have a crucial role, which I think Mark Fish will be really happy about because, as we've discussed, he's really over it.
Do you want me to tell you, or all do you, right, would you prefer to know?
No, I mean, if people don't, you know, skip ahead if you want to just, but like, you're like, this is the end of the podcast, basically. Like, you're about to watch it and then we'll find out. So, like, assuming we find out 5 minutes into the next episode, just tell me now.
Okay, yeah. So we don't necessarily find out 5 minutes into the next episode, but essentially Cornay and Mark are now separate from everyone else. I don't believe they even live at camp anymore.
I'll miss them so much.
Instead, though, they're still going to be in every episode because they're going to still compete in captain's duels. But instead, whoever wins the captain's duel wins something called the Salvation Cup.
What is happening? And the Salvation... Are you making this up, Mike? Stop. You do not say
and,
Salvation
and so
Cup.
And at that tribal council, whoever is in possession of the Salvation Cup can nullify one vote against someone.
Oh,
so they essentially choose one person who has a vote nullified against them at that tribal council. I think I broke Shannon.
Oh my god. I don't... Firstly, Salvation Cup? Second,
that's what it's called. It's called the Salvation Cup.
So they choose a person and they can nullify one vote, which is something that will rarely be important, I think, but we're going to watch a whole duel for it. Every episode?
Nearly every episode, yeah. There might be a couple times, but yeah, pretty much through the finale, we're going to get a captain's duel, and then the winning captain, we won't see them again until Tribal Council. Well, they're going to be sitting in. They make the decision for the Salvation Cup. I think it's after the votes are cast, but before they're read, idol style. I think it is when they reveal that one vote's going to be nullified against that particular person.
It's hard for me to really have a lot to do with this on the spot because it's just so random and shocking to me. But will we get Cornay and Mark, like, will we get scenes of them living together? Because that I want to see.
We will not.
Okay.
I do believe... Yeah, because I think they're just going to be like, I don't know. I honestly, I could imagine that they might have been like placed in like a halfway home, like maybe not exactly slumming it Island of the Idol style, but not exactly completely in Ponderosa. They're still going to be on the jury. And I think they do still sport the beards, maybe for continuity effects. But the only thing we're going to see at them from now on is just going to be these salvation duels, I think is what they're called from now on.
But wait, sorry. I have a lot of information to process at once. Are they at Tribal Council? I know you said it, but it's left my mind.
Yep. Okay. They go to Tribal Council.
Because okay. now they're really jurors.
Basically, think of them as jurors who compete in a challenge every episode to like negate a vote in the game.
Oh, okay. I'll just think of them like that. Oh, that's easy. Thank you for that. Look. Earlier in this podcast, I said, if you're going to do a twist, lead out to its completion. And I think maybe we could have ended the captain's twist at the merge, maybe. I don't know.
So that whole misleading preview about how there's only 11 spots, it's not that the captains vote someone out immediately. It's that those
it
two
be.
Do
that
not
be part- crazy.
They do not participate in it. Mark's happy because that's one more thing he doesn't have to participate in, but he's in for a load when he hears he has to do an entirely other set of challenges and also negate votes at Tribal Council.
I hope we still find things to make fun of them about. I really enjoyed that.
Oh, we still will. Look, they're still going to be part of Tribal Council, so I can imagine there's going to be a lot of reactions or lack thereof that we'll get from them.
Okay, I don't even know where to go from this. I need some time to process. I just heard the word Salvation Cup for the first time, and I need to be alone and think of those thoughts. I'm just going to go to the next question, because I don't know what's going on. All right, what question are we up to? Seriously, I am thrown. Look at me, Mike. I could edit this out, but I don't know if I will because the people need to know that I am thrown. Okay, Jeremy Hamilton asks, is it fair to call Steven an intellectual player rather than a strategic one? I find it hard to give him the GameBot brand after hearing him say that he doesn't think the idol would be a great tool to use and that he just cares about how it could be used against him. He also just feels so old school with his reluctance to get his hands dirty.
I think you can still be a game bot considering he was still hyper-focused on the idea of the idol. You can still be hyper-focused on strategy and not have a good strategy.
Yeah, I think it speaks to his type of strategy, which was like so down the line. It wasn't about playing an idol to be chaotic. It wasn't about being on the bottom and kind of needing to protect yourself. It was about being defensive, as he said, like having power and then just maintaining that power until you get to the end and you're so moral that everyone votes for you. I definitely think I saw more of the like Lee / Savage side in these couple of episodes with, I mean, and probably the last few episodes with how moralistic he was being. But I definitely think like if you were to combine Savage and Stephen Fishback and make them a robot, that is Stephen.
I mean, that is one of the only ways you could combine a Savage and Stephen Fishback. Maybe they go sort of Frankenstein and Igor together on a monster.
Maybe. Sorry, I want to be freaked out by the image you just presented, but I'm just thinking Salvation Cup.
Oh, good. So that gets away the whole vegetable person.
abomination of a human.
Yeah, abomination of a pineapple human stuff.
Can you steal the Salvation Cup? That's the question.
Well, they wouldn't. You know that these two, it's beneath them, I think, to do so.
No, but the other players, like, once you get it, can it be stolen? Because the idol can
be stolen.
I don't
think it's, I forget if it's physical. I'm assuming
there's no real cup.
But I don't think it's brought to Tribal Council.
I best see a cup in some people's hands if you're going to call it the Salvation Cup.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
I agree.
So it's not a cup. It's like how you have, like, the, you know, the something cup, like a sports tournament. That's what it is.
So it's like a championship. You win the Salvation Cup, like the Stanley Cup.
Yes. Okay.
But I do believe the Stanley Cup is a literal trophy as well.
Oh wow. But this should be too. All right. Well, we'll see if people steal the cup trophy Salvation Cup. Anyway, last question on this topic. Subtle Mullet asks, "Idol Bots aside, is it just me, or is Corne kind of growing on you? Like he seems to actually be trying to figure out the game and not just phoning it in, like Mark. Low bar." But whatever.
I mean, yeah, low bar. I guess Corne has not screwed things up this week.
Not
so
this
week.
He's
a little bit. Yeah, he's a little bit on the mend. I mean, it's been fun to honestly make fun of Corne and his attempts to run the game and it completely blowing up in his face. I'd rather have that than Mark, who I think is just pursuing a path of apathy at this point.
I ironically love them both. I love crazy lazy Mark. That we've created this persona of him based on like one interaction he had with Kalani, and also the crazy stuff was more than one interaction. That was pretty much across the board. I love bad player Corne, who got blindsided by his own tribe for no reason, and
ended up unintentionally screwing someone over by giving them an idol that then got stolen from her.
Yeah, he literally just had to be a purse, and he couldn't even do that. He is worse than sweet potatoes. He's trying to claw himself out of these like constantly. You know, just playing the game badly, even though he's not even playing the game. So I've loved both of it. I mean, I also was thinking, when Steven goes, do you think they blindsided Mark? Or do you think, like, someone like Shane is definitely, like, telling Mark because he keeps doing that to get jury favor from him? Because it definitely could have been a blindside. And we know that Mark has been attached to Steven.
Yeah, I mean, I could imagine, though, I think that he's more attached to Shane at this point, right? Shane showed him the idol. He picked Shane to do that captain's duel a couple of weeks back. I would imagine that Mark just casually strolls up to Shane. Hey, by the way, who's going? Oh, it's Steven. Okay, great. But I don't know if Steven's approaching Mark as well. Maybe Mark could have revealed the blindside. But also the thing as well was it was fun, but maybe a bit needless for them to feel like they had to blindside Steven because he had no power. He didn't have an idol. The vote was going to be unanimous anyway. You didn't necessarily need to worry about tiptoeing around him from any perspective, but it led to some entertainment, even though I don't think Steven necessarily had like a Judd-esque reaction to getting blindsided.
No, always blindsided. You could take the Flint hostage. We just got Shane in trouble for telling Zanette to her face. Like, even
That's
if he doesn't
true,
have
actually,
an idol.
Never, so I guess they learn never tip anyone off about anything.
That is a good rule for Survivor. Like, it is really good usually to just kind of, especially pre-merge when they're not even going to be a juror, like, just cleanly take them out of the game.
Yeah, exactly. When you know they're not going to come back at all.
Yeah. Well, we'll never find out, I guess, how Mark felt, possibly, because he's now playing for the Salvation Cup. You said Salvation Cup?
Yes, and that's all he's focused on right now, is that sweet Salvation Cup. Goodbye, Steven. Hello, Salvation.
Did you make it up?
I did not. I had to look at the Wikipedia page just to remember. It is indeed. You will hear the sweet, sweet word Salvation Cup out of Nico's mouth next week with our 2-episode merge spectacular.
That is the pineapple of twists, and that is an abomination of pineapple. I like pineapple. Anyway, I'm going to the merge next week. That's fun. We're halfway through. We did it. I don't know what we did. We did something and we're here. Mike, what do you have going on in the podcast world while we wait for the merge next week?
Yeah, so of course, usual shenanigans with Lost and X-Files over with Down the Hatch and the Bloom Files on post-show recaps. Then over on Rob has a podcast proper this week. We got to talking me, Rob Cesternino, and Mary Kwiatkowski. Outwit, Outplay, Outlist, got to rate and rank some of the more outstanding Jeff Probst moments of both intentional and unintentional humor from over the years. It was a lot of fun to look at everything from the sassy to the cringy and beyond. So be sure to check that out if you haven't yet. We should hopefully be back with another Outwit, Outplay, Outlist coming in a couple of weeks as well.
Did you put in a good word for touchy subjects?
I'm trying to remember now. It was a very long podcast. I'm assuming I did.
Thank you. Thank you for doing that. I'm going to listen and I'm going to be mad if you didn't. So.
Okay. Well,
you tell me. I know the answer, but did you?
No, you don't know. You haven't listened yet.
Yeah. I shouldn't have said that right before I went for the move, but it works in every. Peter has no idea what's about to hit him. It's going to be like, hey, do you unpack the dishwasher? I know. But, his whole life's about to change. I've got a new way of communicating right now.
Thanks, Stephen. You really imparted that onto us with your departure here.
Definitely. Well, okay, so a few things going on in the International Survivor world. The first one being Chizzy merch has dropped. I'm very excited about it. I've already ordered a lot. Will I be the only one ordering it? Potentially. Please not.
No, I will order some as well, and I hope others do too. So you could brand a Chizzy wherever you go.
Yes, I have heard. I mean, Tracy already said that she's ordered one. So thank you for not having me be alone in that, Tracy. But yes, Chizzy merch has dropped. There are mugs, there are shirts, there are so many colors and styles. Check it out. If you buy something, send me a photo because I want to see it. I'm excited about it. That's on the RHAP merch store. Also, other things. The Flip podcast. I just did a podcast with Taryn Armstrong about the anatomy of the Survivor Flip. It was a lot. We actually talked about the season quite a bit. Like, it's clearly fresh in my mind. Ooh. That I think I mentioned it several times. So that's really fun. And you guys who are following along with it will feel like you know everything because you'll know about the season. And then outside of the international Survivor world, I just did the Simpsons Then and Now podcast that Mike mentioned a couple of weeks ago. And then I was like, I want to do that. And now I have. So that was really fun. We discussed two Simpsons episodes, the amazing classic Cape Fear Sideshow Bob episode, and then a recent Sideshow Bob episode called Gone Boy that was no Cape Fear but was also pretty good. So check that out at Simpsons Then and Now. Follow us at A Mike Bloom Type, at Shannon Gates for all of this content that you will just see coming into your feeds, and subscribe to the International Survivor Half Ups feed where you will get all of this content, Survivor South Africa season 5, the game theory stuff, season 8 when it comes up. Just good to be subscribed. But Mike, merging next week, we will be talking about it on my birthday. What better way could I turn 28 than talking about the Salvation Cup?
Yeah, exactly. Your cup is in the mail. Unfortunately, it is David's underwear, but it comes with good luck or bad luck. I think the jury's still out on that.
No, it's good luck. It's mystic. It's cool.
Well, it's misting and it's mystic.
Yeah, it's good luck. I mean, it's bad luck in that you have to see David's underwear or wear David's underwear or be involved with David's underwear, but you will be protected from the cursed idol. We have created this mythology and it is now canon, not like the pirate canon, like you understand. I'm going to wrap up the podcast because I'm still pretty thrown from the Salvation Cup.
Do you think maybe you could just tear up David's underwear and like turn it into a pocket square where it doesn't need to be actually underwear? You could take a snatch of the fabric and turn it into something,
and then you could split its protective powers like the idol, like the Mean Girls crown. We are so down the rabbit hole at this point.
Yeah, I don't think there is any light in sight. We are shrouded in darkness right now.
I like it. I like being shrouded in darkness with the pineapple abomination that is Mike Bloom. So thank you, Mike, as always. Thank you to you guys for listening. Sorry to you guys who have listened. We apologize for all of it. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. We will see you next week. Until then, keep evolving. Bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor.
21 South Africans,
12 ordinary Australians,
16 New Zealanders,
20
Finns,
1 million pounds,
million euro,
million rupee,
the adventure of a lifetime.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.